Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, ladies. Hello, gentlemen. This is the Victor Davis Hanson Show. I'm Jack Fowler, the host. The star is Victor Davis Hanson. That's why it's called the Victor Davis Hanson Show. He is the Martin and Ely Anderson Senior Fellow at the Hoover Institution and the Wayne and Marsha Buskey Distinguished Fellow in History at Hillsdale College. He has a website, The Blade of Perseus. Its address is victorhanson.com. I'll tell you more about that later on in the podcast. We are recording on Friday the 9th. This particular episode should be up on the 15th, the day after Ash Wednesday. Victor, there's lots to talk about, too much to talk about almost, but we've got Nikki Haley. We've got Dartmouth College, Ivy League Dartmouth, doing a 180 on SAT scores. Tech millionaires in San Francisco want to, I don't know, save the streets of San Francisco, and a couple of other topics we'll get your wisdom on. We'll do all that right after these important messages.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
We're back with the Victor Davis Hanson Show. Victor, Nikki Haley, we're on the heels right now of the Nevada primary slash caucuses. Again, Donald Trump won. You still see some polls out there. I think I saw one yesterday, Wisconsin, you know, Nikki Haley is up by 15 points against Biden, blah, blah, you know, Trump and Biden are closer. So there's some info out there that shows her on a national level as possibly noticeably more popular in a national vote. But Victor, I mean, calls for her to get out. She's saying she's going to stay until at least Super Tuesday. Does any of this matter? Is this settled? Should we even be talking about
There's a subtext there. Yeah, there's a subtext. She's not going to win. If you're a primary candidate and you're running in your home state in which you were governor and you lose by more than 15 points, you're done, especially if you've lost every primary you've run in. She had kind of a neat little trick, as I said to Sammy, I don't know, a while ago, that I finished second, meaning I finished last because there was no other person. But my point is this, that she's also in a doom loop, that the further she gets behind, the more strident she has to become to get attention and to hemorrhage Trump. So we're watching a phenomenon where she's not gaining like she said. She's either static or losing, and then she's to make up for that, she's getting more and more strident, which was not her trademark. Her trademark was, I'm sober and judicious and moderate, and I'm a professional, and we don't need any more psycho-melodramatic Donald Trump. But that's what she's doing now. She's yelling and screaming, and she doesn't understand that we're in a historic moment where with Smith and Willis and Bragg and James and Carol and this special process, that there's an asymmetry in the country. It's almost breathtaking. And she's on the wrong side of that. Every time there's a mention of the lawfare that's directed at Donald Trump, she thinks she has to sympathize with the prosecutors. She says, well, you know, he just thrives on controversy. No, he didn't. No, he didn't. And this is the Democratic Party that faced George W. Bush. They called him a Nazi. They did everything, but they didn't do this. And the Democratic Party that went after Romney and McCain, they did everything, but they didn't do this. This is new, trying to get people off the ballot. And so she should empathize with Trump. And yes, there's stories, Jack, that Biden has a war chest of $2 billion. Trump is broke. He's going to have to spend $150 million minimum to get out of all these legal knots that he's tied up in. And so they're going to do like they did in 2020. People have got to remember that the big money in the United States is not in construction, assembly, farming, mining, even oil. It is in tech, finance, insurance, the soft arts, so to speak, offshoring, outsourcing, you know, finance, tech. That's what Bloomberg is. That's what Facebook is. That's what the Google people are. That's what Apple is. That's what Bill Gates is. That's where the big money, and it's all left wing, all of it. And they're going to do everything they can to destroy Donald Trump. So, yes, she is wasting resources and taking donors who, no matter what they say, 80% of them, when they get down to it and they look at Biden and Trump, they will vote for Trump and they will give him money. Maybe not publicly, but they know that Biden will destroy the country. And yet she's siphoning that away. She's going to spend millions of dollars to go through. So what is she doing it for? This is my windy way of saying what she's doing. We know what her strategy is. I wrote an article about 2 weeks ago. I said the four strategies of Nikki Haley. And the first is that she thinks that as everybody gets out of the race, and she keeps saying that nonstop, then it'll be what she always wanted, one-on-one, and then she'll debate Trump and she'll win. That's not going to happen. Strategy number two is that she just kind of limps along like a little wounded coyote and just kind of goes through the motions, and like George H.W. Bush did when he ran against Reagan. Remember? He went through the whole primary and he did a respectable. So if she gets 25-30% of the vote, she campaigns well, she goes to Trump at the convention and says, I have a lot of independents and women, and look how well I campaign. You saw me do this for months. I would be an ideal vice president. And then she thinks privately, Donald Trump is 78 years old.
Right.
And he can't run again. And so he may not finish his term, but I will be here. Now, that's number two. Mm-hmm. Or number three, she goes full Armageddon. And she just thinks, you know, I'm going to bust him wide open. I'm going to slur him, and I'm going to be nasty and mean. And I don't care about my political future in 2028. Or the most likely, and I'm getting to what I think she's doing. Fourth choice, she's going to stay alive because she believes there is a good chance that we've never been in this territory. And these crazy left-wing prosecutors, crazy left-wing judge, crazy left-wing juries are really going to do in the criminal side of things what they did on the civil side with the Carroll $83 million. They are going to destroy Donald Trump physically, psychologically, financially, politically, culturally, socially. And at some point, one of these crazy prosecutors is going to say no bail, we're going to go and they're going to sentence him to 3 or 4 years in a federal prison. And we don't know whether a president can still run from prison. There's nothing in the Constitution that says he can. I don't know the history of jurisprudence. We don't know whether if he is convicted and he is elected president, he can pardon himself post facto. I pardon myself. And, you know, that was sort of like, oh, gosh, there's been so many movies where the king pardons himself. But my point is this, is I think that's what she's doing. She can say all she wants, but there's no other candidate now. And if something happens and Donald Trump is not able to continue, then she's going to say, well, Ron dropped out before I did. I'm a Kamala Harris type person. I'm the logical person. I deserve the nomination at the convention, or, you know, something like that, or after the convention. I don't think it'll work because she has gone down the wrong path, you know.
Yeah.
And the MAGA people, you talk to them. I get maybe, you know, our website and personal email, website, tech, we probably get, I don't know, 50, 60, 70 a day from people. I read them and they won't vote for her. I mean, if it's between Biden and her, I would vote for her. But no, but 20% of the MAGA people will not vote for her.
Yeah.
They won't vote
for Biden, but they won't vote for her.
No, yeah. They'll vote. They either stay home or they'll just.
They'll write in Victor Davis Hanson.
No, they won't. At least a man knows his own limitations. That would be the worst president in the world.
Come on, General Sherman. Hey, Victor, just hearing the word barbecue makes your mouth water. You may already have a low temperature, slow cooking smoker, egg or pellet barbecue, but in the middle of your busy week, folks, who has that kind of time? You need a hot, fast, solar, infrared gas grill. It heats up to 1,000 degrees in just 3 minutes, even on cold winter nights. That heat locks in juices and flavor and grills food faster. In just a few minutes, your family will be sitting at the table enjoying delicious, better than restaurant quality grilled food, juicy steaks, moist chicken, tender fish, and healthy grilled veggies. Solaire is a multi-generational veteran-owned business. Their portables, carts, and built-ins are all made in the USA from commercial grade stainless steel, so they're built to last. Get your free guide, how to choose the right infrared grill at besthotgrill.com. That's besthotgrill.com. Solaire infrared gas grills for fast, delicious grilled food every day. That's besthotgrill.com, besthotgrill.com. And we thank the very good people at Solaire Infrared Gas Grill Company for sponsoring the Victor Davis Hanson Show. You know, Victor, I just read that 1,000 degrees. That kind of happens when there's a fire. And when there's a fire, somebody pulls a fire alarm. And some people even pull fire alarms when there's not a fire. So this is a lead into Jamal Bowman, the congressman from New York who gained some notoriety for trying to disrupt the proceedings of the House by pulling a false alarm several months back. By the way, he's a former teacher in New York, and he had on in his classroom in his middle school, and this was on video. Someone kicked it up the other day about his wall. Some of them are real schmoes and dirtbags and murderers that he was teaching his students to glorify. The wall, I'm reading from an article here from, I think it's from the Daily Mail. The wall also included former Rep. Cynthia McKinney from Georgia, a notorious anti-Semite and 9/11 truther, as well as Black militant Motula Shakur, who served a long prison sentence for armed robbery, and Asata Shakur, godmother of the rapper Tupac, and a radical activist and member of the Black Liberation Army, who was convicted of murdering a New Jersey state trooper. She broke out of prison in 1984 and has been living in Cuba ever since. This is a Bronx congressman. So, Victor, if you had any quick thoughts on that, but also a segue, you just told me something before the show began about you've seen some video from Newsmax about someone was in the Bronx.
Yeah, and, I mean, Maria Bartiromo, remember in her Sunday interview, asked Donald Trump, why wouldn't you campaign in the Bronx? He said he would. And so Newsmax, I don't know to what degree when they interview people on the street, they filter it, because I know that some do. In other words, that when they don't get the types of responses they want, they may cut them. So I don't know what the actual polling was. But anyway, the reporter in question interviewed a series of African-American men and women, and they asked them, would you go to a Donald Trump envisioned rally in the Bronx? And would you go to a Joe Biden? And every single one said, I would never go to a Joe Biden. I'm getting him out of here. But I would love to see Trump. And they all said the same thing. It was the economy. That their lives were better off.
Yeah.
And they were better off because this this Biden agenda is geared for one constituency only. The bi-coastal wealthy elite that are obsessed with DEI and ESG and radical environmental causes that affect everybody but them, the consequences of which, and the subsidized poor. And there, it's a war on the middle class and anybody who wants to be upwardly mobile. And I saw Yellen the other day. They were asking her about prices, and they went through them. I think it was Senator Kennedy from Louisiana just went through all of them, Jack, you know.
Yeah.
Food and rent and cars and apply, it's 20 to 30% higher. And she said, well, wages have gone up. That's true, but not to the same degree. And not everybody got increased wages. Maybe a plumber's wages went up a little bit, but not as much as 30%. And people on Social Security or fixed income retirement surely didn't. My gauge is I buy Sport and Spotty and Gracie and I'm getting a Joe Biden Sport and Spike and Spotty, my 3S Queenslands. I buy them food.
Yeah.
And it was before COVID, a can of dog food was 78 cents. And now it is $2.14, the same thing. And that's just the way it is. And I bought an Echo Diesel and a type of Bighorn thing, and I went to get another one, and I can tell you that it is $15,000 more 2 years later. Yep. And that's everything. And so they don't want to talk about that, how it affects people, but people are affected and they're angry about it.
Did you see that Stephen A. Smith, the sports commentator, his rant about this? I don't know where I saw it, on Bongino, but going through all these points, like, okay, yeah, many points. One was, yes, inflation coming down, but damn it, everyone has to work two jobs and they're still paying, $7 for a gallon of milk. You're crazy.
You know what's happening is that anybody who's adjusted to this inflationary economy is trying to help people that are friends and family that are not. And I know so many parents. I'm doing that with some of my children and friends. You're trying to do all you can because they are getting killed. Every time I go into the store, I say to myself, this was me in 1990 when I was making $26,000 a year, period, and I was still as a professor, $27,000, and I was losing money farming, and I had three children, and my wife was trying to work at the post office, and I don't know how I afford this. I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. I don't know how people do it. I really don't. It's just impossible to go in and pay these prices, and they're not going down. And he keeps saying, oh, inflation, we whipped inflation, Yeah, you whipped inflation in the sense that you raised it by 30%, and now it's going up about 3.5%. It's not going down. And the price of that was pricing all the middle class out of homes when you took 1.8 30-year mortgages and put them over 7%.
Yeah.
That's just what happened. Yeah. And it's nice if you have money and you have it on T-bill and you're getting 4 or 5% instead of 1%, but most people are not, are 50% or paycheck to paycheck survivalist. So it's a disaster. And it's just,
Even this news that, like, from the other day, 300,000 new jobs, surprising. It's not changing people's minds.
No, people and if you look at the jobs, about 90,000 of them are full time, well paying jobs. The rest are part time or less well paying.
Right.
And this is, you know, it's, and then this is added on to the complete destruction of the criminal justice system and crime, and people are freaked out. They look at the border and then they say, that guy that just crossed, they're going to give him free health care. They're going to give this person a bank card, American Express card for $500. They're going to give that guy a phone. They're going to fly that guy without an ID. And I have to stand in line at the DMV to get a real ID coming up. They like him better than they do me. And then they hear all of this about, if you don't give this to Ukraine, we're going to be fighting, Chuck Schumer. We're going to send your... I'm sorry, Chuck Schumer, but after what the military has done to people, and they kicked out 8,400 people, almost all of them with natural immunity to COVID, because they didn't want to get a very iffy booster that had more side effects for young men than did the virus itself, and you kick them out... And then you told everybody that you were going to hunt down the white supremacists and terrorists in your ranks. And then you meekly issued a report in December of 23 that there was nobody there after you smeared them. Then you went DEI. They're not going to do it. They're just saying, you know what? I'm going to pass. I don't want anything to do with it. I don't want anything to do with it. And so that's what's getting people angry. They look at the military. And you know what? They look at the military. They look at the FBI. They look at the CIA. They look at the DOJ, they look at the IRS, and they say they're all weaponized. Do not get on the wrong side of those people. They're completely unaccountable. They will sue you or go after you, and they will either break you in a lawsuit or they will act bureaucratically as judge, jury, and executioner and get you if they think that you're a nail that pops up and they have to hammer down. And so people, that's what he's done. And if Donald Trump is the nominee, and he can give some speeches like he did, as I said to Sammy, after Iowa, and he's got a lot more professional people around him, he could win the Senate and the House, and he could win by 6 to 8 points in the popular vote, because there's so much anger.
Right.
I know a year is a long time, but in Joe's case, that's bad news, because he is declining very rapidly.
Yeah, that line about revenge being that success is revenge, I think that Trump said it.
I don't quite understand what they're saying. These people are so unself-aware. The left, these leftist elites, they say things they write every day. Do you read these things in Real Clear Politics? John McIntyre's great, you know, parallelism with one view, the other view. I read it every day. And it's Trump, if he's elected, he's going to fire all these things. He's going to overturn. You think that's what Joe Biden did? You think that's what Obama did? They came in and cleaned house on the DOJ. They got rid of everybody. Anything that had Trump's fingerprints, a secure border, get rid of it. Calm Middle East, get rid of it. Gas prices affordable, get rid of it. Crime under control, get rid of it. That's what they do. And now they're worried that Donald Trump might do what they do. And that terrifies them because they know what they've done. And they think, you know, I keep saying this to everybody. The left keeps thinking, if I had done the crap, if the stuff that I did to Donald Trump was done to me, and I knew who did it, and he knows who did it, and I got back in power, I know what I would do. And that's, so I know that Trump will do that. I just know he will because I would do it. And that's how they think. And
yeah,
we'll see. But
there are other ways they think too, Victor. And we have Italian Americans, we have Swedish Americans, we have African Americans, and according to some Democrats, they think we have undocumented Americans. And we'll get your thoughts on that right after these important messages.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
We're back with the Victor Davis Hanson Show, recording on Friday, the 9th of February. Victor has a website, The Blade of Perseus. Do visit it, victorhanson.com. I'll just keep it short and sweet here today. Subscribe. $5 gets you in the door. $50 for the year. When you subscribe, you can read the exclusive pieces that Victor writes, the ultra pieces that he writes for his website, two or three of those a week, links to everything you, Victor's done, written, appearances. So go there, subscribe, The Blade of Perseus, victorhanson.com. Also check Victor out on X/Twitter at VD Hanson. That's his handle. So Victor, my senator from here in Connecticut, Chris Murphy, was blathering the other day, as I'm blathering right now, and he talked about undocumented Americans, and like, these are people we need to, that just that phrase alone is kind of nuts, isn't it?
They know what they're doing. They all were for it. They all got rid of the wall. They got rid of catch and release. They got rid of the refugee status in your home country. They didn't say a word about Obrador. They didn't say a word about fentanyl. They stopped the wall. And they got 8 million illegals. And that was perfectly the idea. And the idea was they were all going to stay down in Arizona and Georgia and Texas. And they were going to flip these states under these new lax voting laws. They were going to flip them blue. Ha, 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 Texas. You're going to have 70% of your votes by mail-in. Something like that. Georgia, Alabama, maybe back to Florida. And guess what? Finally, people said, you know what? These are 550 sanctuary jurisdictions. We're going to send these people up there. And they did. And they said, oh, my God, why should I ever suffer the ramifications of my own ideology? It's toxic. It's supposed to be for you, not me. And now they're saying, oh, my gosh, this is one of the top three issues. This could hurt us at the polls. So first, what we'll do is try to get the Mitch McConnell naives and get them, lure them into a comprehensive, which is always amnesty, immigration pact. And then we'll blame Donald Trump for it. The fact that they see they have to blame somebody shows you there's a problem. And fortunately, the Senate, there's some great senators. I really like the Republican senators. There were, you know, Cruz and Rubio and Ron Johnson, those guys. And
Mike
Rand
Lee,
Paul.
Yeah.
Yeah, all of them. They just said, screw you. We're not going to do this. You guys screwed the border. You live with it. And if you really want to help stop the border, they called their bluff. They said, then just build the wall and go back to the Trump. And they won't do that. So that was all. They don't really want to stop this because they think they can get immediate voters under the lax new voting laws of motor voter and automatic registration same day. Vote harvesting, third party, all that stuff they love. And if that doesn't really happen so quickly, then they see it as a long-term investment. The only irony about all this is, we mentioned that Newsmax, but I've had some people working, as I said, on the barn. I'm talking to other people. I do it every day. And I tell you, I think I must have talked in the last week at the supermarket, at a restaurant in town, getting gas, at the post office. I would say I talked to 30 Mexican-American men over the age of 40. And they came up to me and want to talk about Trump. And they're going to vote for Trump. I couldn't believe it. This was not 2020. And I think what's going on, I'm not sure it's going to happen because they're going to be bombarded with the Trump is a racist, and they're going to have, you know, the left's going to have all the money and they're going to bombard the airwaves. But I think what for now is happening, they're getting tired of that whiny left wing bi-coastal. We know what's good for you. You're going to do this. You're going to think that. You're going to get rid of your gas stove. You're going to buy an EV car. You're going to have transgendered restrooms. You're going to talk about transitioning in your school. You're going to, you know, have women and your boys. They don't like it. They being the people, they're sick of it. And they associate that with Joe Biden and the fact that he, the other thing gets, I don't think we've talked about that, but one of the reasons of his unpopularity is not just that he was always, as you pointed out, and I have, he's a mean SOB before he was senile. And B, that he's just tragic because he can't, you know, string together a sentence. But what gets them really angry is he only gets animated. You know what? As I said earlier, Iran can kill people through their surrogates. He doesn't get angry. Hamas, right. He doesn't get angry. Not at all. Putin, he says some things about Putin, but he's not angry about Ukraine. No. Houthis, they can kill some Americans. He doesn't get angry. You mention Donald Trump or MAGA people, his eyes get beady, like lizard-like. He gets grimaces like he's the Joker. He gets angry and he starts like at that press conference. Yeah. It's really amazing. The only thing that wakes him up and animates him is pure hatred for Donald Trump and the right wing. And that bothers people. They think he's a mean, ornery person. And he is. And
we talked about on a recent podcast, Victor, the great example of that was when Biden was recently talking at the black church, I think it was in South Carolina, and he just became unhinged at yelling about Trump and bringing up the lie that, you know, that Trump defamed the soldiers who died as suckers, you know, that he wouldn't visit a cemetery. But it was, he, even though it was a lie, he believed it in his heart and he was screaming about it. And he's just
No, it's like he's back to back in your chains. People forget about the back. He's going to put you all in chains about Romney in 2012. He was addressing not poor people. He was addressing very accomplished black professionals. And he was telling these people that Joe Biden, know that they're going to put you back in chains as if you're slaves, as if these people are not able to protect themselves. If they don't, they understand they're very successful, they have money, they have influence. And yet he was treating them like little children. And then how he ever got away with that corn pop, I just saw that. I listened to that the other day. That thing is the most patently racist, lying, fabulist, horrific story. I just told corn pop I measured off some chain. And I went down there and I said, corn pop. It was just horrible. And then he got into the golden hairs on his leg. And you put all this together. I mean, it just, if you just stop and you just say, wait a minute. I know Donald Trump says stuff, but this guy blows on girls' hair. He goes on the tarmac on a Finland airport and turkey gobbles a young baby. And he just eyes people in the audience that are young women. He calls them out.
Yeah.
And then he, you know, it's, you ain't black. And hey, boy, he says stuff and it's crazy. And he walks off the stage and he looks around and then he starts, if he gets off the teleprompter, and then you've got these obsequious toadies that come in and try to tell you that what you see and what you hear is not reality. No. This is 1984. You didn't hear him say that. He didn't walk the wrong way. No. He was just exploring. And they don't like to be lied to. And, you know, but Donald Trump, when he tweeted, people said, yeah, he tweeted all right. Yep, no doubt about it. And that was the way he was. That's, you get warts and all. That was Donald Trump. Somebody the other day said, did he say bird brain about Nikki Haley to me. I was at camp. I said, yes, he did. He called her a bird brain. Shouldn't he have not said that? No, he shouldn't have said that. That's kind of mean. She's very intelligent. Is he going to apologize? I said, no, he's not. He's not going to apologize. That's Donald Trump. And you, that's Will Cain throwing his badge down in high noon. That's Steve McQueen and Yul Brynner saying, we always lose. We're the gunslingers. Yeah. That's Shane going, tell your mom that there's no more guns and I've cleaned them out, everybody. That's who he is. And
we wouldn't have a war in Ukraine
you
or
would not have a war,
etc.
You wouldn't have a war in Gaza. You would not have the Houthis sending missiles. You would not have China serially telling us that they were going to invade Taiwan. That balloon would have been blown up in one nanosecond when it reached American space. That's just the way Iran would not be doing what it does. He would call Iran up and say, if you kill one more American vicariously through your surrogates, this is a target list. And we wouldn't have any of this. Nope. And the Europeans would hate him and they'd scream and they yell. Every once in a while, I used to talk to a European journalist and they said, well, you know, he did make us spend more money and that really helps Ukraine. That kind of stuff. Secretly, deep down inside, they know he was better for them than Obama
or
Biden. But they will never say that because he's so crude.
Yeah. Well, sleep more soundly at night with him as president than current clock.
And I was, when I watched Tucker, when Tucker, I think Tucker was just, he was just, you know, sort of probing Putin. And he mentioned Clinton and Bush. And then he mentioned the next president, Trump. And you'd think that he would light up. Maybe he didn't want to say a nice thing about Trump because he thought it would hurt Trump and he likes him. Or maybe he doesn't. But when Tucker mentioned Trump, he didn't get too excited. He said, yeah, I know him. I can deal with it. But I think what he was saying is, you know, Trump raised sanctions on us. He killed 200 Russians in Syria. He got out of the missile deal. He sold those damn javelins to Ukraine. He told me that if I went, you know, into another country, he was going to look at the Kremlin. So I don't think they particularly liked him. I know that everybody believes Russian collusion, Russian collusion, Russian disinformation. But I don't think the Russians like. I think they like Hillary Clinton. I think they like Joe Biden. I think they like Barack Obama. They don't like them personally, but they like their policies because they can take advantage of them.
Yeah. Well, Victor, we're going to let's tackle a higher ed. We have Dartmouth College doing a 180 on SAT scores, and we will get your thoughts on that, Victor, right after these important messages. We're back with the Victor Davis Hanson Show. So, Victor, as you know, many Ivy League schools, maybe all of them, and any number of other prestigious colleges and universities decided to forego using the SAT scores for admissions because racist, right? And after 4 years of this practice, experiment, I don't think it was an experiment, I think it was just a practice that clearly showed itself to be terrible. Dartmouth has come out saying that now it's going to reinstate the use of SAT scores for admissions. Duh. Thanks for, excuse me, not thanks, Victor. Do you have any take on this?
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of like an admission that after the George Floyd, we all went collective, and the COVID lockdown, we went collectively crazy. And we did things that are absolutely inexplicable after 100 years of using the SAT, which was designed to allow people who didn't go to prestigious schools or didn't have money, but who had aptitude that could be exhibited on an SAT score and would get in, we got rid of it. And people forget that when you get rid of the SAT, you're down to two criteria. There's the personal statement or extra, what the person, and then there's the GPA, and then there's the SAT. And the SAT is used to calibrate the quality of the institution where you got your GPA. So I went to Selma High School, and I had a 3.999. I was third highest. I got a B in PE and was not salutatorian. Okay. When I got to UC Santa Cruz, it was pretty hard to get in 1971, and there were people who had 3.5s, right? From Palos Verdes High or Beverly Hills High or something like that, or Woodside or Palo Alto High. They were so much better trained than I was. That 3.6, I mean, I was reading all night long the first 2 years just to keep up. Because I, you know, I played football, I wrestled, everybody went out and partied, and it was like a rural, it was like American Graffiti. And
I was trying to think of the name of the movie,
How I lived. I mean, everybody cruised on Saturday night, you talked to the girls, and everybody goofed around. And then the curriculum was pretty easy, and, you know, we read King Lear once, I think. But the point I'm making is that the SAT could correct that. So I remember thinking, if I'm going to get into this really hard place, I'm going to have to do the SAT. So I would go around, I'd say, Mom, what does condign mean? I remember that word. And she said, appropriate. I said, I didn't know that. And I would write it on a card. And then I would just get the, and I didn't have the training to do well, but I just studied. And even then, I stayed up all night the night at a football dance and came home at 4 o'clock and went and took the SAT at 6 in the morning and came in late. That's how the attitude. But my point was, it was used to adjudicate the GPA. When you throw it out, you have no way of ranking these GPAs. You have no idea. And then you have the personal statement. At Stanford, they let in a guy who said, you know, BLM, BLM, Black Lives Matter, what, 100 times? And then they bragged that they... of those who took the SAT optionally and got a perfect score, which you've got to be very, very talented or trained to do that. It's almost impossible to get an 800 on the math and the verbal and the analytic. And they did it, and they rejected 60 to 70% of the people. And they don't realize one great truth about this whole DEI. It is admissions and hiring are not the end of things. They are the beginning. Once you go down that road and you do not use merit, and you don't use equal opportunity, but you do prejudged opportunity result, you've got to completely adjust your whole system that follows.
Right. Yeah.
Otherwise, you get Eric Adams saying, everybody's chocolate here, great. Or you get Fannie Willis says, I'm a victim of racism. Or you get Claudine Gay saying, I'm a victim of racism. Because there's no deterrence. There's no merit. There's no standard. And so that's what's happened, and Dartmouth knows that. They let in students with no SAT, and then all of a sudden they're very left-wing, brilliant faculty, their little hothouse plants. They went into a faculty senate meeting. I'm just imagining, because I've been to hundreds of them, and they do something like this, Jeff. Wow, you know, in my German upper division lit class, I don't want to say anything, but we just can't speak German anymore. And it might be because we're letting in students that are not qualified. But I didn't say that. I'm just suggesting it. I'm throwing it out there. And then the classics professor says, well, I'm not sure that Greek should be required anymore, but I have some really unusual students, but they come from non-traditional, and I wasn't able to finish the Greek, but it doesn't matter. But maybe we should water down the course, or maybe we should get rid of this D and F, their stigma. That's what they do.
Yeah,
I keep saying that. You either got to inflate the grades, or you got to water down the class, or you got to bring in new classes.
Well.
And by the way, Jack, really quickly, there is a
new
science. You know what that is? I've been reading about it, and I've been adjudicating papers on it. It's
what?
Called elasticity. You have no idea what that means. I didn't
know. Tell us. Tell us,
okay.
Professor.
Elasticity is a good thing. Inelasticity is a bad thing. What it means is this, that you look at courses, and you look at student demand. And when they want more sections of the construction of gender, or they look at six new ways of, you know, cartoons or Marvel comics or transgendered sports, those courses are oversubscribed.
Right.
And when you have something like Aeschylus's Persians in Greek, Or you've got five plays of Shakespeare and yet you don't change the curriculum because the students are wiser than you. So they're inelastic. But great universities, they monitor student opinion and student demand. And they know, the elites know, that when you have five sections of one class suddenly, and you have something like Schiller or Goethe, and there's not enough people taking it, it's inelastic. And why is that? It's because the professors have vested interest. They're elite. They're out of touch. It's not ever, no, they're 55 years old. They know what makes a classical education and how to instill analytic skills, inductive reasoning, disinterested examination, classic prose skills, vocabulary. They know what does instill that and what doesn't over time and space, the last 2,500 years. So they're trying as adults to inculcate the students and not let the lunatics run the asylum.
Mm.
But
yeah,
that's the big thing on the left, that all courses must be elastic. And so they're just constantly changing. They're just changing all the time. The new names are coming in, new sections are coming in, and you've got to just drown out the old fogies that are fossilized, calcified, ossified.
Yeah, liberal arts give way to majors in video games. But, you know, Victor, there's a professor who's in this sweet spot of what you've just been discussing, I want to get your thoughts on him. But before that, I just want to take a moment to note our sponsor, Brickhouse Nutrition, and their new product, Lean, a doctor-formulated weight loss supplement. The studied ingredients in Lean have been shown to help maintain healthy blood sugar levels, help optimize metabolism, and keep your appetite under control. Friends, if your life is a bit stressful and you want to lose weight, add Lean to your healthy diet and exercise lifestyle. Get 15% off and free shipping at Take Lean, and that's Lean is L-E-A-N, takelean.com, and enter Victor15, V-I-C-T-O-R-1-5. That's promo code Victor15 at takelean.com, takelean.com, and thank the good people at Brickhouse Nutrition for sponsoring the Victor Davis Hanson Show. Victor, one of my favoriteest websites out there, the College Fix, which was founded by John Miller, my former colleague at National Review, and as you know, John teaches the journalism program at Hillsdale. It's run by Jennifer Capani, the editor of the College Fix. Just a great, great, great. A reporting site. UCLA professor suspended after refusing lenient grading for Black students demands $19 million plus in damages. So, Victor, this is, I forgot his name. Gordon Klein.
I remember it. Wasn't he was in the business school or school of management?
Yeah, and after the George Floyd decision, they asked him to please grade Black students more leniently.
Figure that out because I remember when that happened. I know he's been back in the news.
It's going to trial in 2 weeks.
Yeah, so the university said, well, we never had an official policy. I think there's some students came to him and wanted leniency, and then he issued a mission statement. You know what I mean? And says, this is equal to everybody. And then that mission statement was referred to the university.
Right.
And they said he has no right to do that, to address the students defending his rigid grade system. I think that's how it happened.
Defending really meritocracy, yes.
Yes. And I don't think the university would be stupid enough to put that in writing because it's racist, but they went after him as a racist for having standards that were racially blind. And the only way they are going to change is to be sued, and to be sued big time. And because they won't quit, they're wedded to this. And everybody should realize that the DEI, the whole thing fills we owe a lot to Shelby Steele. We're really articulating this, but it's based on this white guilt,
right.
This imperfection and this typical profile of the affluent, suburban, successful, moneyed, highly educated person who feels somehow that his life is empty. Maybe it's his lack of God. Maybe it's the lack of muscular labor. Maybe it's his self-chosen disconnect from the muscular chat classes. Maybe he doesn't want to be around the plumber, the electrician. He's afraid of them. I don't know what it is, but they manifest it in kind of a medieval penance. And they say to themselves, I'm going to force this racist DEI stuff, and then I'm not going to be subject to it because my kids, I can call the dean or the president and get them in, or they go to special, you know, prep schools or whatever. But I feel so bad that I'm going to support all these things that destroy the lower white working class. That's what they think. And it's not, it's going to hurt us. So you're starting to see something, Jack, that when you see all of these stories, and I have no idea if they have anything to do with non-meritocratic hiring, but there's a public perception that they do. So you take the Boeing subcontractors that are sending these MAX 789s without sufficient bolts.
Right.
Or you look at these near misses in airlines, or you look at confusion with scrapes on the ground, and you look at the DMV, or you look at government services, and the narrative that's going out is we are hiring people on criteria other than analytical skills as measured by quantitative tests for hiring, admissions, retention, promotion. And the result of it is we have done it to such a great degree that this very system is now breaking down. In other words, it's not a problem of that little lounge in the English department. It is not a problem of which lawyer gets to go to Harvard versus Princeton versus UC Berkeley versus, I don't know, UC Irvine. It's fundamental and existential. It's affecting the very way we live. It's dangerous to live in America because you cannot count on competent people because they are being hired and judged of all different races by criteria other than merit. And part of it's this legal, critical this and critical that, the critical theory school from Frankfurt, that whole idea that there's no absolutes and everything is relative and based on Foucauldian ideas of power. So who are you to say that it's important to have math background to be an air traffic controller? Who are you to say that somebody coming out of the military that, you know, landed an F-18 5,000 times on a carrier might have a little bit better pilot training than somebody who learned on a, you know, simulator? That's how who do you say? And this is that relativism. So societies in the past have broken down when knowledge has not been transmitted from one generation to the other. Look at Rome, look at Byzantium, look at the Greek city-state, look at the
Aztecs, South Africa right now.
Look at the Mayas, look at South Africa. They're falling. Yeah. Look at Zimbabwe. It just doesn't happen.
Infrastructure crises, you know, someone does have to know engineering to be able to run the water treatment plant or the electrical.
It's happened in my field because we have not insisted on for a number of years in graduate school. The only way you can really learn Latin and Greek is you get an active vocabulary versus a passive. What does that mean? That means if you say you see agathos or kalos on a page, you know it means fine or good. But when somebody asks you, what's the Greek word for fine or good? You can reproduce it. That's much harder. The active vocabulary is about one third the size of a passive vocabulary in most languages. So what I'm getting at is when you get rid of Greek composition and you don't force people to come actively and think of things, their vocabulary is ossified and it becomes entirely passive. And then you don't require the same number of courses. And the result is that when you pick up a classical paper today and you look at the scholarship, you can't trust it. Or when you go to a university and you see a classics major, it doesn't mean that person knows Latin or Greek at all. If you don't know Latin or Greek at all and you're a classics major, that means you have no real expertise to be able to adjudicate why Aeschylus is different than Euripides or why someone believes that Thucydides is a more scientific historian. You can't get that from English. You have to read it yourself, and you have to look at the language, and you have to compare it with other texts you've read. And when you lose that in the generation, as we have in classics, then you the field is just, it's just becoming a few little mandarins in enclaves. And that's true of all these fields, every one of them.
Yeah.
English major, you just look at the catalog. Go to Stanford or Harvard or Yale. Go to the bookstore. When you ever go to a campus, go to the bookstore and look at the books that are being ordered for their main meat and potatoes classics. So if you get studies in English literature, they're not reading Hamlet, King Lear, Othello. They're not. They're not. If you, the novel, the 19th century novel, they're not reading Joseph Conrad. They're not. They're not reading Dickens. They're not reading the Bronte sisters. The authors are based on their race and gender and their ideology, and they're,
you know, Victor, for the longest
good,
time,
but not they,
you would have atheists teaching religion courses. I mean, I think most religion professors at colleges are not believers. And I thought, well, this is a weird oddity that's kind of restricted to, not restricted, but of religion. But it's not, as you just said, you know, you have classics majors who really hate classics, English majors who really hate English, right? I mean, if you...
Well, I mean, you're not exaggerating, because Daniel Peralta, I forget his name, but he is a classics professor at Princeton. I'm pretty sure.
Princeton?
I wrote an article. Go read my article in the New Criterion. And he said that he wanted to see the field destroyed, and he wants to, you know, they don't want Greek to be a requirement. They do not want classic. He was classically trained, and he was given great scholarships, but he didn't want to repay that generosity and magnanimity to a generation beneath him. It was only the one on top of him. So he didn't transmit that knowledge and scholarship. He just wanted to be a nihilist for contemporary political advantage. The other thing is, very quickly, I don't know if people have this phenomenon or not, if you're outside of teaching, but it surely must be true in vocational training or law or something. But I've had this phenomenon. It's really, as I got older, especially now at my age, it's really disturbing. What I mean is this. You have former students that you, and I mentioned this to Sam, but you spend a lot of time tutoring. And most of them are what you would call today DEI. And I'm talking about, you're teaching four classes a semester and you're giving 8 to 10 independent studies of an hour a week. So you're spending another 10 or 12 hours plus the prep. And you're trying to help people who from non-traditional backgrounds that want to go to law school, MBA programs, teaching credentials, PhD programs, and I did that for over 20 years. And one thing you do is you don't look at a person's race. So if somebody comes in, I can give you one example very quickly. Two African-American people came in once to me, and they wanted special education. They had taken a class they liked. I only gave independent studies in Greek and Latin, because you couldn't get those, that type of expertise, or Greek composition or Latin composition. But every once in a while, I do something as a favor. Well, two African-American people came in and said, we both are HIV positive. And this was like in the 90s. And no one wants to give, but we think we can do the work. And would you be, we like you. So I gave both. They were married. I gave them an independent study, and I did it for two semesters. I liked them. I think I really helped them. And unlike others, they really appreciate it. But my point is this, that when the DEI came, it was like the Salem witch trial hysteria, you know what I mean? Or the iconoclastic movement in Europe. All of a sudden, and this happened to me for friends too, friends
right.
that I'd known
yeah.
for 20 years. All of a sudden, they were telling you that they remember with really bad memories how they were discriminated against. They weren't. I can tell you that. I know people, I had students that came from Southeast Asia with nothing, and they were given enormous opportunities. When I had seniors or people applying to graduate school, people got angry at me, Jack, because I'd say, you're a white male. We have a real problem, and we're going to get around it. And we're going to get around it by we're going to get a perfect SAT, and we're going to study till you're sick of it. But when people came in and they were female or minority, I said, this is going to be much easier. And we're going to really use this to get you into graduate school. I didn't like saying that, but I wanted, my interest was in the student if they were prepared. I never did that if they weren't prepared. But my point is that that type of student in the last, I don't know, 5 years, I must have had at least 10 to 12 instances where I bumped into them or I've emailed them and they are angry. Not particularly at me, but at the society, and they feel that they weren't treated right by society. Or I've had friends that may be one quarter of this or one half of this, or one, and they've said, you know, I really didn't realize that it was really bad. Or I've been in a workplace where all of a sudden people come out of the woodwork and said, did you know who I was, that I was here? It was almost like a mass hysteria after George Floyd, and almost everybody who had a careerist agenda came out of the woodwork and tried to get through it. It's like before the whole thing collapsed, you know?
Right.
I got to get this job. I can be a diversity, equity, inclusion administrator. I can be promoted, but it's a golden moment. So I've got to say that I've been victimized by all.
I too am a victim. Yeah.
Yeah. And it happened. And, you know, I put up with it when people would drive out to my farm and want a recommendation for this or that. And then about 2 years ago, I just dropped out. Said, nope, non hic porcus. I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
So you know what? You got a wonderful classical education, and you got it because professors like Bruce Thornton and myself spent hours tutoring you, and no one had more attention to you, and you got scholarships because you were in a disadvantaged class, and I do not want to hear it. I'm done. Done. No. Anybody who mentions their superficial appearance is essential to your character and your career, I'm done. And it was a liberating moment.
Yeah.
It really is. It just, you know,
something
I have close friends,
Soviet.
Close friends, and they'll call and say, you know, as a Latino woman, and I said, no, I'm done. Bye. As a white male, you want to hear that? I'm done.
Right.
I don't like the tribalism. And it happened. Yeah. And then you realize that once you say, I'm done, you're not mad. You just said, I'm not going to put up with this because I know the truth. And you were given extraordinary advantages and opportunities in the best country in the world. And you were not subject to systematic or overt or insidious racism or triggered warnings or any of this stuff. And you're a careerist and you're trying to take advantage of this, and I'm not going to be a part of it. If you really want to talk and you want to treat people according to their shared humanity, I'll be happy to do it. And if you need help as a former student, I'll be happy to tutor you or write recommendations or dialogue with you. But I'm not going to sit here and listen to this, oh, poor me, because it's the same thing as the baby boomer generation. You remember the therapeutic movement in the 70s, Jack, where all of a sudden people who you knew had wonderful parents and they were like, came in on right. World War II and the Depression, and they worked 20 hours and they raised these spoiled kids, and suddenly in the 70s and 80s, they had this magic moment. I woke up and I didn't realize that we were part of their rat race, and Dad never really told me how much he loved me.
And I didn't get hugged.
No, he was at the factory for 18 hours to make sure you had high top Converse tennis shoes. You know, I got so sick of that
yeah.
therapeutic. Oh, poor me. My parents did this to me. It was the same thing, only in the DI.
Yeah. Also, they sound like they're preparing for show trials or something, you know, by I can't be affiliated with Victor Davis Hanson, you know. So,
oh, hey, well, Victor, that I didn't even mention that. I've had people that the nice thing about that is I've had people call me and they're not even subtle about it. They'll call me and say things like, I need a scholarship. Could you help me? And I said, yes. And do you know somebody who helped me get a job? Yes. And I said, do you want me to? No, I don't want you to write. No, please don't write. I don't want you to write. I said, why? I don't want your name. I know that sounds bad. I want your help, but not your name. Please. No name.
Okay. Victor Cooties.
It's true. And I don't do it anymore. I really don't.
Yeah.
When people call me up or they write me, then they think they were a former student or colleague or family friend, and they've now taken the DEI LSD capsule. I don't. I think they're hallucinating, and I just don't do it.
Yeah.
And it's no big loss to them. They don't really want to go. They're embarrassed anyway. And Heck, I'm a septuagenarian now. I can't do much for anybody anymore, so I don't really
care. Mamma mia. Listen, Victor, you know what you can do is you do very good sort of Thurston Howell imitations like you did earlier in the show.
Well, those are not imitations. It's not my talent. I'm just remembering them. I have a good memory, unlike Joe Biden, and I can remember that voice because I heard it for 50 years.
Okay. We have to wrap up because but I have a longer thing to read. First of all, I just thank you folks for listening. Thanks to those who, for me, go to Civil Thoughts, read Civil Thoughts if you want to get it, civilthoughts.com, free weekly email newsletter I write for the Center for Civil Society at AmPhil. I forget if I talked about going to victorhanson.com. Go subscribe, $5 gets you the door, $50 a year. Thank you to those who rate the show on iTunes and Apple, and those who leave comments. We read them all. And here's one. It's a little longer, but I think it's worth reading. It's titled Justice. And it says, thanks for your treatment of the terrible assault on the American justice system evidenced by the left's weaponization of the courts against Donald Trump. I've practiced law for 50 years. As a sole practitioner, I've always marveled that I could represent my clients in the courts of our great republic before judges and juries, having every chance of defeating powerful adversaries, including well-funded corporations and the government. I've always told my clients that it is a myth that we have a, quote, right to justice, end quote. We have no right to justice. What we had, and this is a rare and precious thing, is the, quote, right to fight for justice, end quote, with a fair opportunity of achieving justice if we do fight for it. In seeking justice, we have striven to reduce the effects of bias and prejudice. The objective is to create, as far as reasonably possible, a level playing field on which to conduct the fight for justice. Alas, as you have so accurately narrated, the judicial persecutions of Donald Trump and other recent abuses of our system of justice may herald the end of the right to fight for justice with a fair chance of achieving it. Revival is a theme in history as much as decay. We are in decay and can only hope for its revival. And that's written by a gentleman, Ed McGill. And I think he's very dead on and very appreciative of the wisdom you've been sharing, Victor, on these points. To everyone else who writes, thanks very much, Victor. You've been terrific. We'll get to hope we could have talked about San Francisco and efforts to.
Yes, we must do that.
But we'll do that on the next episode. Yeah. So thanks, Victor. Thanks, everyone. We'll be back soon with another episode of the Victor Davis Hanson Show. Bye-bye.
Thank you, everyone.